Welcome to That Medic Podcast, your bi-weekly dose
of all things digital health, global health, and leadership.
My name is Success, a student at Cambridge University.
And I am Simmer, a student at Harvard University.
Join us as we chat with some top professionals in healthcare. Enjoy.
In this podcast, we spoke to Jamie Strauss, Chief Clinical Officer of VizAI. We discussed the importance of care coordination, how artificial intelligence can improve disease detection and workflow optimization, and how to address physician hesitancy with new healthcare solutions. Today's show is perfect for anyone excited about how AI will transform healthcare over the next decade, or just intrigued about digital health generally. So, without further ado, let's have a listen. Hi, Jamie. Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for taking the time out to speak with us. So we normally start the podcast by asking the question, why did you decide to go into healthcare?
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so thrilled to be here. I think one of the reasons why I went into healthcare was I was always passionate about caring for people. And when I was younger, I actually remember the exact day where I decided that I wanted to become a nurse. I was working in a skilled nursing facility. I'd worked in the dietary department. I think I was around 15 years old at the time. And I was sitting in the break room with all the nurses, and they were talking to us about where we wanted to go to college and what we wanted to go to college for. And at the time, I thought that I wanted to be a lawyer. And one of the nurses that I worked closely with looked at me and she goes, "You're not a lawyer." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" She's like, "You care too deeply about people to be a lawyer." She said, "Have you thought about nursing?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I see what you guys do, but I'm not necessarily sure that's what I would want to do." She's like, "Go home and look at nursing." So I took the time, I talked to some people, and my aunt was actually a cardiac ICU nurse, and I spent some time with her. And I realized that nursing would give me the ability to care for people. And as I started in my nursing career and then became a skilled nurse, like I was a certified nursing assistant, I really realized that you can make such an impact on people's lives in the worst possible time of their lives and be there to help support them if they don't have family or they don't have anybody. And you can really be compassionate and drive some changes in their life at the most important time. So that's why I started in healthcare and what drove me to my nursing career.
Yeah, I know. I think it speaks to first the importance of mentors and how they can really, good mentors can really shift your trajectory. And then two, I mean, it's what they always say, nurses are the most trusted professionals in America, right? More so than doctors, right? They're working more intimately with patients than physicians really do. I know that after you studied nursing in college, you earned your master's in nursing and your MBA at Grand Canyon University. I was wondering if you could tell me why you wanted to go to graduate school and pursue specifically this combination of degrees.
Yeah, so when I originally got into nursing school and I started my career in trauma neuro ICU and neuro ICU, and I worked a gamut of different critical cares, everyone around me was going to either nurse practitioner school or CRNA. And when I had originally kind of thought about my path as a nurse, CRNA was very appealing to me. However, I had two young kids. And when you go to CRNA school, it's really hard to work and go to school, right? You almost can't do it. So that path kind of got cut for me. And after I had spent some time in the OR and seen, you know, the role of the CRNA, while it's incredibly valuable, it was definitely not going to be my path because of that. What I really enjoyed most about healthcare. I really always have had an interest in business. And I think when I looked at healthcare, there was tons of clinicians that were really great clinical administrators, but they didn't always understand the healthcare and the healthcare economics behind healthcare. And it was something that I very quickly was, when I was in Miami, started educating myself around of like the economics and how payments are done for hospitals and health systems and how it's so important, because if you are not maximizing kind of the business side of healthcare, then it's not sustainable for the population, right? It is a business. It's the business of caring for people, but you also need to make sure there's that economic impact. So as I started looking at trajectories, I quickly found myself in leadership positions in nursing. So after I had worked, I then moved to Miami and became assistant nurse manager and manager, and really felt that anchoring myself with that MBA in combination with my master's in nursing would make me a more effective leader and be able to really build service lines and build programs that not only had the best clinical care, but also had the best financial health for the organization. So that's really where my passion for that came together.
Right. And I mean, speaking about sort of your beginning experiences with leadership, I know that you were the assistant vice president of operations for neuroscience, oncology, blood and marrow transplant at Baptist Hospital in South Florida. And you were also the executive director of neuroscience at Piedmont Healthcare. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about each of those experiences and what they taught you about leadership.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I had so many great people along the way that have influenced me and mentored me to get me to where I am today. So starting in Miami, Miami was definitely an exciting time in my career and probably the one that really helped me develop as a leader. I got to do the most amazing things and I had trusted leaders who just kept asking me and pushing me to do different things that were out of my comfort zone. So when I first went there, again, I started as assistant vice president or assistant nurse manager, then nurse manager, then director. And at that time, it was really when stroke care was getting organized and comprehensive stroke certification was the anchor of most neuroscience programs. So I got to experience that journey of really building with my with the team there, the second ever certified comprehensive stroke center in the state of Florida. And then we continued to grow and evolve that program that expanded beyond stroke to all neurological disease, right? And which included a brain tumor program and epilepsy program and then DBS program, and we got to grow it. And then I was tasked to help build the inpatient side of the oncology program and support the work there as they Baptist Health South Florida was on the endeavor of building Miami Cancer Institute, which is a beautiful facility and has world-class cancer care. And then also bringing into the oncology work was the blood and marrow transplant program, which was one of the most exciting projects I got to do. We really built that from the ground up, and it was a lot of exciting work with world-class physicians and a team that I got to work with. Also, when I was in Miami, I think some of the biggest joy I had was a lot of the international work I was able to do. So because of Miami's unique location, we were able to, we had a large international department that worked out into international communities to bring services and healthcare. So with members of my team, we were able to actually do great work in Panama. We did some work in Dominican Republic. I did some work in Jamaica where we actually brought stroke care into those communities. So it was great to be able to see how healthcare is delivered in different geographies and populations and see some of the challenges. Like we think we have challenges in the States with healthcare. When you go to other countries, it's a totally different perspective. So Baptist was really a great career journey for me. I learned so much and had such great leaders and mentors. And then I actually came to Piedmont Healthcare in Atlanta to help them build their neuroscience program. You know, Atlanta is in the heart of the stroke belt, right? We call it the buckle of the stroke belt. So really there was underserved need. While we have some great stroke centers in Atlanta, the population growth, there wasn't enough centers to take care of patients. So kudos to Piedmont for saying, hey, we have a large health system and we need to bring these services in. And came in, it was right before the pandemic, and we were able to build a foundational stroke program, lay the foundation, you know, train staff, train nurses, and get that comprehensive stroke center up and running in pretty short time, which most people would say it's challenging to build a CSC and imagine building it in a pandemic. There's all other challenges there. But we were able to get them on the path to get the certification. And Piedmont is a great health system. They have a strong cardiovascular center, probably one of the leaders in cardiovascular care in the country. And really building that neuroscience program made sense for the patients. Because when you cardiovascular disease and you know, cerebrovascular disease are so well connected and tied that, you know, often if you have one, you have the other. So, you know, them taking the strides to build that program was just a great experience for me as well. And great leaders there. I got to work with world-class leaders. So it was a fantastic opportunity and a lot of learning. A lot of learnings that I didn't anticipate going in that during a pandemic, how we were going to do this.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that. I'm really curious about some of those challenges during the pandemic and what learning came with it.
Yeah. So, you know, everybody's priorities shifted in the pandemic, right? And we still had the priority and task to bring the stroke care to the community, and even more so, right? Like there's literature out there, you know, during the pandemic that a lot of people didn't come into the hospital to get stroke care. And by the time they did come in, it was devastating disease, right? And it was really hard to treat them because they had waited so long. And then there's some that think that, you know, there was an uptake in stroke in during the pandemic due to pathology of the disease with COVID. So I think, you know, it was how do you, while you have to go on this mission of driving and building this program, because it's important, even more so now for the community, how are you thinking about allocating resources differently to a project like that, right, in a pandemic? So it was definitely, you know, bringing everybody in, but also understanding that priorities may lay other places with resources. But I think we also saw how do we manage patient flow and had more of a focus on that because patients were so sick and critical care beds were so short to come by. And almost all stroke patients that come and get a thrombectomy need to go to an ICU. It was really putting systems of care in place very quickly, where a lot of organizations, that takes a long time to build those systems of care. Piedmont was actually really innovative in the approach of building systems and care and making sure we were bringing patients and bringing the right patients that needed the treatment. So I'd say that was probably the biggest learning, is learning how to allocate resources effectively while focusing on everybody else's needs in the organization, which was a lot. It was a very fast changing time with people transitioning to telemedicine. But also really making sure we had strong systems of care in place. And I had great physician leaders that really helped support and drive that to make sure we were set up effectively.
Oh, that's an incredible story. And just like the challenges you must have faced, and so for me, at least, they're unimaginable. So I want to shift a little bit and talk about your current position. Of course, you're now the chief clinical officer of Viz.ai. So I want to ask you, for our readers who may not be familiar, what exactly is Viz.ai and what is the problem you're trying to solve?
Yeah, so Viz.ai is really a technology and tool that was built by our founder and co-founder. Founder is neurosurgeon, co-founder is postdoc. They met at Stanford. They were doing their biodesign where they identified through personal experiences and in previous experiences that there was a need in care coordination in stroke care. So they came together and built a software. It's software as a medical device, and it's a technology that uses AI over imaging and other. Now we can talk about what we do beyond stroke, but started with really looking at imaging and stroke, identifying large vessel occlusion to accelerate care coordination for patients who were suffering from a stroke. And within that platform, you know, it's not just an AI alert. There's a high fidelity image viewer. So when you're on call and you're working in a busy system, there's times you can have 8-10 stroke alerts at one time, right? And especially in the middle of the night, you need an easy way to access imaging. So you were able to see all of your imaging, all the CT perfusion maps, and then you're able to do your care coordination in a HIPAA compliant way through chat. So when you look at large health systems with hub and spoke model, there's a million phone calls that take place if a patient is sitting out in a spoke facility and they need to get to the hub. And in stroke, time is brain, right? So you need to move those patients as quickly as possible because every minute that passes, that brain is ultimately dying. So being able to communicate that care in a HIPAA compliant way with all of the appropriate information you need was critical. And we really laid the path for a lot of AI. So we were the first ever to receive the De Novo pathway for computer aided triage. So we set that foundational work and really pave the way for all these AI technologies you see now that come through the triage pathway. In addition to that, we really focused and they made sure that we had clinical evidence that showed improvement in care and outcomes for patients. And because of the work that was done there early on, we were able to actually go and get the first ever new technology add-on payment for our software, which was so beneficial because it opens up the ability for more systems to have a reimbursement mechanism to be able to bring this software in that ultimately will help patients in the communities that need it the most, right? Where there's limited access to care, limited access to specialties. And from there, you know, our mission is to increase access to life-saving treatments. And that's really, you know, and one of our values is patients first. And everything we do is looking at patients and disease now that is either often underdiagnosed, misdiagnosed, rare disease, or requires extensive care coordination across multidisciplinary teams. So one thing I always say is you can have the AI, but the AI isn't good if you don't figure how it works into the workflow for the care team.
Right. And I guess it speaks to a point that you were making a couple of times about care coordination. So I wanted to ask you if you could share some stories from your own experience as a nurse to emphasize why care coordination is so important.
Yeah. So when you think about the patient journey and all of the, depending on their entry point of care of where they come into a healthcare facility and that, and when I say healthcare facility, that doesn't always need to be an acute care facility, right? It can be your entry point into an urgent care, freestanding ED, your primary care office, an ER, really coming in for an elective procedure, right? That patient touches so many different providers and so many different members of the care team that sometimes there isn't an easy way to get the information that you need to make a decision in the medical moment of truth for that patient, right? There's an urgent finding, there's urgent disease that needs to have somebody with the expertise look at that at that time. And, you know, we talk about the EHR, and the EHR is a great repository of meaningful information and really is there to collect information. But as a clinician, when I was a clinician, going in and trying to find information about a patient and put that story together is very time consuming, right? And it's hard. So when you think of, you know, the EHR of your system of record, you can think of VIS as like the system of action. In that moment, it's giving you all of the relevant information to all of the relevant care team to be able to make a treatment decision for that patient, which is critical. I think like nurses are often at the heart of like workflow and the patient journey, right? Because the nurse is with the patient the whole time, right? There's always a nurse that's guiding that patient care. And I think nurses really have a way of looking at that whole patient journey where a specialist physician may just see that patient in that moment at that time that they're needed. The nurse sees them all the way through and is often the one quarterbacking the care for the patient, right? Calling the primary physician, the hospitalist, calling the specialist that needs to see the patient, making sure they're getting their testing, making sure they're moving effectively through while doing documentation. So pulling that, making it easier to coordinate care makes it better for the care teams who I think now are just so burnout, right? We see it. There's so much literature coming out. There's a massive nursing shortage. We know that there's a physician shortage. And being able to make their work easier, but while at the same time making outcomes for patients better, I think is really one of the most important things that we do.
Right. And it speaks to one of the quotes that we were speaking about earlier. Those closest to the struggle know what the solutions need to be and the important role of nurses in this. I'm also curious that why did you make the transition from Piedmont to Viz AI? And sort of what are you doing now in your role as chief clinical officer?
Yeah. So I made the transition because I really wanted to have a larger global impact on how healthcare is delivered. It's something that I'm extremely passionate about. Like I said, I've done work in disparate communities, you know, living in Miami. There's, you know, it's a melting pot of culture and different demographics and different socioeconomic, but also a lot of the work that I did internationally, it really opened my eyes to there's a way that I wanted to impact how healthcare was fundamentally delivered. And I wanted to do it on a larger scale. And, you know, while I was in Miami and in Atlanta at the health systems, I was able to make with my team an impact in that geographic location. And I was also, you know, a previous customer of Viz. So I was a user of Viz, right? So I used to, you know, run stroke calls and I'd used Viz and the technology, and I saw the huge impact and difference it made in our programs and in patients. And I wanted to be a part of that. And I wanted to be a part of that evolution of also how nurses can also make an impact on a larger scale outside of the traditional, you know, care model that nurses typically are in of caring for patients at the bedside. So very passionate about the mission, the values, the culture of Viz is phenomenal. We have an amazing team, brilliant people. And I really wanted to transition to a role that I could use my clinical skills, my knowledge of healthcare delivery, and my business skills and pull that all together to make an impact on patients.
Mm-hmm. Right. This integration of these different skill sets that I think is incredibly important. And I think it's really interesting that you started off really as a user of Viz before you joined the company. I think right now we're in a moment when a lot of people are finally appreciating the power of AI. And I mean, maybe that's in part driven by the popularity of ChatGPT and other tools. But I wanted to ask you about Viz's AI platform for, let's say, stroke. I was wondering if you could walk me through the end-to-end process of how that platform works and how it might integrate into a hospital workflow.
Yeah, so it's a great question. So again, it goes back to you can't just throw AI at a healthcare problem, right? You got to really get it in the workflow. So the way that it works is we're a cloud-based service, right? And it sits on a virtual server at the hospital, and we ingest all types of healthcare data now, right? And we can use the stroke as the example. But we're not just ingesting CTA, CTPs, right? We have other AI now that we're running off of ECGs. We ingest data from the EHR to run AI. We use NLP. So taking, when I say healthcare data, that includes imaging as well as reports, EHR, all types of other data sources. And we take that and we run it through an AI algorithm. And from there, it gets processed very quickly. Imaging, it's processed pre-PACS before it even hits the PACS system. So users and care teams get the notifications much sooner. And then from there, we work on the ground level. So we have a whole team of, we call them customer and clinical success teams. And they're all, most of them are all clinicians. They are either come from a nursing background. We have physicians on the team. So we have a lot of clinicians routed in our company that then will go on site and work to map those workflows with the hospital. And when we say workflows, it's not just that patient journey in that facility. It's where are you getting patients from the community and how do we have to set up and implement so you are being able to coordinate care 400 miles away, right? Some of these health systems are really spread far apart. And then we do all of that workflow mapping, and then we do the configuration based on that. And we give the tools. It's like a toolkit, right? Like what activation buttons do you need? What share to clinic buttons do you need? What notify this care team do you need? We build a directory in there. So everything that you need to take care of that patient is right in the application. And it's not just the mobile application. It's also, we have a web-based application. We also integrate with the PACS system into the worklist for radiologists. So that whole care team is part of it because different parts of the care team want information in different way. Radiologists want it within their PACS. You know, specialists and care teams are usually on the go. They want it on their mobile phone. So we then map that integration and workflow. We start ingesting the data and then we really monitor and go live and look at the impact. And I would say one of the things that we always do, and this probably goes back to my economic days and my desire for business, you know, when a hospital makes a purchase like this, they really are hiring you to do something, to do a job to be done theory, right? Like they are hiring you for something. So it's really important to make sure that you're delivering that job for them and their patients. So we also work really closely to establish what those metrics are that we need to look at. and monitor them and give that reporting back to the organization to help support them and help support the need for the technology. So we do work very closely. We also have a customer success team, which is really like in charge of the account. And they are like the day-to-day people that work with that account if they need support, if they hire new staff that need training, if they change their workflow, if they bring on a new health system, that's their point person that is going to be there for the life cycle of the account to help support them.
Gotcha. And you know, I mean, as you know well, healthcare providers can be skeptical of technological solutions. I think the key example of that is like the electronic health records or EHRs. They were supposed to transform medicine from like the paper charts and increase interoperability, but they've ended up burdening physicians, other healthcare workers, and driving burnout. So we can talk specifically about Viz, but I want to speak, I just asked this question more broadly. How do you think we should contend with this skepticism among providers about new technologies, about integrating AI into healthcare?
Yeah. So I think it's true. I mean, I remember when I first became a critical care nurse and we documented on the ICU worksheets on paper, and then we transitioned to the EHR, and it's challenging, right? Because, you know, you had one packet where all of your patient information was, and now you have to sift through this EHR, like we talked about, to find the relevant information that you need, which then takes time away from taking care of patients. So I think that for clinicians, and I think we're getting there, and I think a lot, there's been a lot more education and knowledge and invisibility to what AI can do for you, not only as a provider, but for patients and health systems. So I think that, you know, you have to build tools that serve the user. So you have to really build a tool that is built for clinicians in our case, right? So you have to go in and understand their pain points, their challenges. What do they need? Where does care break down? And you build those tools around them. So at Viz, we actually do like design workshops where we go on site, we spend days, you know, with the care team and understand what happens in that workflow and where the opportunities are. And then you build the solution for them. And then you take it to them and say like, hey, does this work? Is this going to fix the problem? And they say no. And you're like, okay, let's go back to the drawing board. So I think when you make them part of the process, you know, to find the solution, it's definitely easier for them to accept and want to use it because it is going to deliver value for them. Again, it goes back to that job to be done. What are you hiring us for? What are clinicians hiring us for? And making sure we're solving for that with them.
Right. It's including them in the conversation and tailoring solutions to what they need. I also want to ask you about the public aspect of this. In a recent survey by the Pew Research Center, 60% of Americans said they'd feel uncomfortable if their healthcare provider relied on AI to diagnose diseases or recommend treatments. So there's some certain public uneasiness, of course. I want to ask how that rubs against the work you're doing at Viz AI in terms of mitigating bias in AI.
Yeah, it's actually a great conversation and something we kind of get pulled on to talk about quite a bit. So one, it starts with what you're building the AI off of, right? When you think about populations and you think about different disease, let's use cardiovascular disease, right? We know that patients present differently on an ECG based on demographics, based on race, ethnicity, age, different things. So when you're building that AI, you need to ensure that you have diversification of populations. And you're thinking about where are these patients in a demographic or even geographic area, maybe like underdiagnosed, right? And making sure that you are pulling in those data sources to train the model so that it doesn't detect for just the majority of the population. It's going to identify and detect for all of the population. So I think that's the first thing. And I think I think we've come a long way on the healthcare provider side or clinician side of educating about AI. But I think there is definitely a further need in the community to educate patients and, you know, consumers really like why this is beneficial, right? Like you can use AI to find a clinical trial that you maybe would have never known you were eligible for, or your provider would have never known you're eligible for. And now there's this access to a treatment that without AI, you may have never had. And, you know, and that's something we do on our platform. We have a VizRecruit, and we work to with clinical trials and finding patients. So I think that's the start of it, is building the right model with the right information, constantly retraining that model as you learn with new data sets, educating the community. But when I think about bias, you know, I actually think AI benefits that. So if you think about a patient, when you're getting an AI alert, you don't see that patient most of the time, right? You don't know where they live, socioeconomic status, demographics, race, ethnicity. All you know is this patient is at this location that has this disease, and you need to make a treatment decision. So I actually think when you look at it, AI does help with that bias in a way, because the patient isn't sitting in front of you. And if you have bias, which, you know, I hope and I know that most people do not, but if you have that that patient sitting in front of you, you may be more biased to how you're going to treat them. Where if you're just taking actual structured data and saying, okay, this patient needs a thrombectomy, we're bringing this patient for a thrombectomy. So I think that's kind of my holistic thought. I also think that, you know, when you think about diversity and inclusion, you know, it's a big topic right now in healthcare, and I'm so glad we're finally there. I think that, you know, when we look at diversity and inclusion in healthcare and clinical trials and other things, making sure that these tools and these things that we know for sure have a bigger impact on patients and patient outcomes are available to everybody. Right? And it's addressing the health disparities within communities, rural communities. And how do we make that more accessible to everybody? So everybody has the same access to care, no matter where they are, no matter if you're in North Dakota or you're in Miami Beach, right?
Wonderful. You know, I think we're really in an exciting time with AI, with Viz, with many other AI approaches in healthcare. And I'm curious, from your amazing vantage point, where do you see healthcare going in the next decade or so? And for reference, that's about when many of our listeners will be early or mid-career healthcare workers.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a transformation over the healthcare sector in the next decade. And I say that because there's still looming challenges from the pandemic, right? With workforce, you know, where so much of the healthcare dollars are being pulled towards the workforce right now and making sure there's stability to take care of patients. So I think there's going to have to be creative solutions and tools to help nurses and physicians and other clinicians do their job more effectively. And also, how do we open up gaps in care across these communities? Right now, you see in the pandemic, everybody is like moved, right, geographically. And now it's, how do you ensure in all of those communities that you have the access to care? And that is really where AI and care coordination comes in. You know, you can go to your primary care office in, like, I keep saying North Dakota, I don't know why, but North Dakota, and you can have AI analyze your ECG and find that you have a rare disease like hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And there's no center within probably 1,000 miles for you to travel to, but we're able to connect you to the closest specialist in that community that can do a televisit, make sure you get your echo in your community, make sure that you get the appropriate care that you need through tele. So I think it's really going to evolve even further than what we already saw. I mean, the COVID did bring like better acceptance of telemedicine, better acceptance of technology. It allowed health systems to make transformation that they've probably wanted to make for a long time, but now we're forced to make and make those investments in it. So it's going to be an interesting time. I think you're going to see a pretty significant growth. I think in the AI space with healthcare, you're actually going to see a consolidation. We look at the markets and what's happening within, you know, technology, and I think that you're going to start seeing consolidation of AI into companies where they're broadening their suite and their offerings to be able to kind of condense some of that AI space out there.
That's really interesting insight. Thank you so much for that. And I think that nearly wraps up the episode. But before we go, I wanted to ask if I could get your 3 pieces of advice for students interested in a career pathway like yours.
Yeah, so First of all, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. I think the most important thing that I've learned in my career is never say no to an opportunity. So if somebody is offering you an opportunity to do something that may not be in your current job scope or your current area of expertise, they see something in you that you may not even see in yourself. And if somebody is offering you an opportunity or asking you to stretch out of your comfort zone, I encourage you to take it, because that is how you become more diversified in your skill set and the things that you're able to do, and really learn new things and different challenges, approaches, and be able to work with different teams. So that would be number one. Number two, I would say, is in the leadership realm. I think the most important thing as a leader is really ensuring that your people are cared for and you are kind and humble as a leader. I was a leader very young, and I had to become very humble very quickly. And as a leader, we are all human. We all make mistakes. And when you can show that humbleness and humility to your teams, they will respect you more by saying, hey, sorry, I wasn't right, right? I made a bad decision. That's okay. And I would say number three is, don't be afraid to do something different than what you've already done. Like, I know we talked about people giving you opportunities, but challenge the status quo. If you see something that isn't working or doesn't work and you have a solution, make sure you share that and make sure you aren't afraid to try something new, because it'll just really strengthen and broaden your ability to be impactful in the world.
What a wonderful note to end on. Thanks so much, Jamie. Really appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Make sure to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. You can also head to the description of this podcast to follow us on all social media so that you don't miss out on any of our content.